Thank you very much for this presentation. I'm very happy to be here in this wonderful framework and to tell stories about schools 4,000 years ago. So schools probably existed in Mesopotamia since the invention of writing around the mid-fourth millennium before the Common Era. At the beginning of the second millennium, that is more than 1,000 years after, the proportion of the population impacted by academic education increased significantly. Literacy and numeracy disseminated among the elites, and more importantly for the discussion today, schooling began to target children at this time. We know almost nothing about the material and social environment in which masters worked. In these conditions, historians cannot really describe in great detail the way in which masters prepared and used documents in order to teach mathematics. However, texts written by students or produced for them have come down to us in abundance. The work of masters left traces on these documents, which allow us to partly reconstruct the organization of teaching. In this lecture, I focus on didactical structures of these texts. I show the diversity of these structures, and I will try to grasp the mathematical notion conveyed by these structures. School exercises were found in many places in the ancient Near East, mainly in Iraq, Iran, and Syria. However, two sites were particularly prolific. Nippur, where tens of thousands of school tablets were excavated during the 20th century by American teams, and Mari in Syria, where a school was discovered some years ago. Nippur is, Nippur is here, you see? So, from a statistical point of view, Nippur dominates all of the other sites. In the old Babylonian period, Nippur was the place par excellence for the transmission of learned tradition. The abundance of Nippur sources provide a well-documented portrait of education in these schools. For this reason, I mainly focus on Nippur. Most of the school texts are written in Sumerian, a language which was spoken in southern Mesopotamia during the third millennium BCE and disappeared as a mother tongue before the beginning of the second millennium, that is, before the school we are speaking about. In old Babylonian Mesopotamia, the population in this time spoke Akkadian, a Semitic language. So the children were speaking Akkadian, but were learning in school in Sumerian. The content of the school tablets show that the teaching was focused on writing, literature, accounting, and mathematics. Mathematical tablets represent broadly 20% of the school texts. The curriculum for learning cuneiform script and literature in Nippur has been studied by different scholars, particularly by Nick Veldhuis from the University of California, Berkeley. I will come back on his work, which is very important. My own reconstruction of the mathematical curriculum was largely inspired by Veldhuis' methods. According to Veldhuis, the curriculum in Nippur schools was organized in three levels: elementary, intermediate, and advanced. These three levels correspond not only to specific text, but also to characteristic tablet shapes. As you see in the slide, these shapes were classified by Assyriologists as follow. Type 1 tablets are large, rectangular, and multi-colonned, and contain a long text beginning on the obverse and continuing on the reverse. Type 2 tablets are also large and rectangular. However, the text on the obverse is different from the text on the reverse. Type 3 tablets are small and contain a short extract. Type 4 tablets are square or lenticular and contain a short exercise. Type 1, 2, 3, 4 were used in Nippur in the elementary and intermediate levels. Type S tablets are rectangular, sometimes very elongated, as you see here, written in a single column and contain an advanced text. The curriculum consisted essentially for the literacy curriculum consisted essentially in learning by heart and writing lists of cuneiform signs, Sumerian vocabulary, and grammatical structures. The intermediate levels consisted in applying the elementary repertoire of signs, words, and grammatical paradigms by reproducing Sumerian sentence and administrative forms. The advanced level was focused on Sumerian literature. This is the work of Nick Valdez. I skip, but it's important because when I worked on mathematical text, I realized that this different this structure is the same in mathematics. List that is so. The evidence. So now I speak on mathematical texts. The evidence of the way in which the teaching material was sequenced and ordered is abundant and varied, and this alone proves the importance accorded by the master to the order of the exercise. For this reason, I enter into details on traces of ordering. Let us observe, for example, this tablet. It contains an enumeration of measurement values in increasing order. For example, one sila, two sila, three sila, and so on. One sila is a capacity measure which represents more or less 1 liter. This kind of text is called by historians metrological list. In this type 2 tablet, the measurement values are classified in 4 categories: capacity, weight, surface, and length. Whenever several metrological lists are put together on the same tablet, we observe the same order: capacity, weight, surface, and length. This other example contain another kind of text, which is called by Assyriologists metrological tables. We recognize the item enumerated in the metrological list with, in front of each of the measurement values, a number written in sexagesimal place value notation. I will come back later on this notation. In the same way, several numerical tables are sometimes put together on the same type 1 tablets, such as this one. The tables are the following in this order: a table of reciprocal and multiplication table by 50, 45, 44, 26, 40, 40, 36, and etc., until 120, 115, a table of square and a table of square roots. And when several numerical tables are put together on the same tablet, we observe always the same order. Sometimes only one list or table is written on a tablet. For example, here we see a multiplication table by 9. At the end of the table, we see better on the, in the transcription, an additional line gives the first line of the multiplication table by 820. That is, you have the multiplication table by 9 and the first line of 820. And it appears that the tables of 820 follow the table or the table of 9 in type 1 tablet. That is, this kind of notation is a kind of catch line, the first line of the next text. Another example is the metrological tables of weights, which ends with the first item of the metrological tables of surface, which appears to be the metrological table following that of weights in type 1 tablets. We see that individual lists or tables are the most often followed by a catch line indicating the place of this list of table inside the whole set it belongs to. We see that a fixed order of item is observed inside three main texts: metrological lists, metrological tables, and numerical tables. Are these three main sets also rigidly ordered relatively the one to another? This question can be answered by examining the so-called type 2 tablets, that is, as mentioned just before, tablets containing different text on the obverse and reverse. For example, on this tablet, we see that the obverse and the reverse show very different aspects. On the obverse, the left-hand column is a lexical list, a list of name of profession, carefully written with an elegant archaic script. Nick Veldhuis and others before him have shown that this kind of inscription is a model that was written by a master to be reproduced by a pupil in order to memorize it. The model was copied out two or three times by your pupils, then erased, then written again, and so on, which made the right part thinner and thinner. Some type 2 tablets show the remaining place still free, like here. Sometimes the place, we see the two copy of the two of the pupils, like here, but the most often, the right part of the tablet is broken along the vertical line which separates the model and the copy. On the reverse, a continuous text is written and corresponds to sections of lists or tables memorized in a previous stage of the curriculum. Thus, the type 2 tablets contain two texts which can be ordered in the curriculum as follows. First, the text written on the reverse. Second, the text written on the obverse. Systematically comparing the text written on the type 2 tablets, Nick Veldhuis reconstructed the literacy curriculum. I applied the same method to mathematical texts. As a result, it's clear that first to be learned were the metrological lists, and second, the numerical tables. The other kind of texts are more difficult to order, but it appears that probably it existed a kind of specialization in schools, which is reflected by a text like this one, in particular the third sentence, which is a so-called proverb, which says, "The scribe trained in counting is deficient on clay. The scribe skilled with clay is deficient in counting." It opposed counting probably with an abacus and working on clay, that is writing. So there is an opposition between to be skilled in calculation with abacus and to be able to write cuneiform on clay. On the basis of all of these observations, I reconstructed the mathematical curriculum in Nippur as follows. First, the metrological lists. Second, the metrological tables and the multiplication table. So all of this concerns the elementary education, elementary mathematical education. At this point, it's necessary to give more explanations on the so-called sexagesimal place value notation, because this notation plays an essential role in the old Babylonian mathematical practices. For this explanation, the best method is to adopt the approach of ancient masters, that is to closely examine school texts. This is the multiplication table I have shown you before. On the left hand, I will show you perhaps a copy, it's clearer. On the left hand column, we read one wedge, two wedge. I don't know if you see one wedge, two wedge, and so on until nine wedge, one chevron and one. So you recognize 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, etc. And until 20, 30, 40. Ah, excellent, merci. So, now the second column on the right hand, in front of one we read nine wedge, that is the number nine. In front of two we read 18. In front of three, 27, and so on. So you recognize the table, multiplication table by nine. In front of seven, we expect 9 times 7, that is 64. But we read 7. But we see 1 space 3. It means that the 60 of 64 has been replaced by a wedge on the left position. So you see that there is positional principle and with a base 60. It's exactly the same as our system when we say 1 minute, 3 seconds, we can write 1.3. It's exactly the same system. And if we continue the reading, we arrive here, 20 times 9, we expect 180, but that is 3 times 60, so we expect 3 times 60, but we see 3 here. This 3 of 3 times 60 and this 3 in the third line is written in exactly the same way. It means that there is no difference in cuneiform writing between 3 and 3 times 60. In general, there is no difference in cuneiform writing between 1, 160, 160s, and so on. This is a kind of floating notation. That is a notation which doesn't indicate the position of the unit in the number. So this sexagesimal place value notation is sexagesimal, place valued, and floating, which is very important for what is following. Here is a metrological table which shows the correspondence between length measurements and numbers in sexagesimal place value notation. On the left hand, you see one shusi, it means in Sumerian finger. It's a length measurement of about 1.6 centimeter. One chaussee, it corresponds to 10 for reasons I don't explain here, it's not important. So two chaussee corresponds to 20, three chaussee to 30, four chaussee to 40, five chaussee to 50, six chaussee to 60, that is one. And we see again the sexagesimal place value notation. Here is a metrological tables for weight, and you see exactly the same. Three she, she is a weight, a measure of weight. Three she corresponds to one, and one gin, which is 60 times more, corresponds to one times 60, that is one. The, exactly the same principle. So, with the elementary curriculum sets up two different kinds of mathematical entities. Firstly, measurement values to express quantities. Secondly, numbers in sexagesimal place value notation. These two mathematical entities are distinct, but they are closely connected by the metrological tables. The nature of this connection between measurement values and numbers is a key issue of the cuneiform mathematics, and this connection is explained by exercise of intermediate level that I will show you now. Following the elementary level, so the students in scribal schools, at least probably the minority engaged in mathematical studies, were trained in using these tables to solve mathematical problems. These exercises were noted on a round or square small tablet, the type 4 tablets, which look very different from the tablets used in the elementary level. The type 4 tablets from Nippur exhibit a strongly coherent set of exercises solving three classes of problems: how to calculate the surface of a square, how to compute a reciprocal, and how to solve linear problems. A linear problem is the problem that can be solved by a succession of multiplications and divisions. Among the intermediate level exercises, the calculation of surfaces are of special interest as they explain the articulation between the two mathematical entities. A dozen exercises of similar content and layout devoted to the surface of a square were found in Nippur. All have the same layout. On the top left, we see three numbers in sexagesimal place value notation. On the bottom right, we see a small problem text. Let's observe one of these exercises, this one. On the top left, we see three numbers, 20, the first 20 is broken, but the second is clear, 20, 20, 6, 40, which is the product of 20 by 20. The statement noted on the bottom right corner runs as follows: two chaussees, the side of a square, how much is its surface? Its surface is one third she. What is the relationship between the numbers written on the top left, 20 and 640, and the lengths and surface measurements written on the bottom right, that is two chaussees and one third she? This relationship is exactly that established by the metrological table. Indeed, two chaussees corresponds to 20, we have seen that before, and one third she corresponds to 640. We can infer from this observation that the process of calculation included the following steps. First, the length measurements was transformed into floating sexagesimal place value number thanks to the metrological tables of lengths. Second, the number 20 is multiplied by itself using the multiplication table, which gives 640. Third, the product is transformed again in turn into the corresponding measurement of surface, one third Xie, thanks to metrological tables of surfaces. The third step required special skill. Indeed, due to the floating character of the notation, as noted above, the same number in sexagesimal place value notation appears cyclically in the metrological tables. For example, the number 640 corresponds to one third Xie, but also to 20 Xie, which is 60 times larger, and so on. Thus, the choice of the relevant cycle of the metrological tables to be considered required a mental control of the order of magnitude of the expected results. The nature of the metrological tables is now clear. They do not provide equalities between quantity and numbers, but a correspondence. This correspondence is not bi-univocal. It means that the reading of the table from left to right is straightforward, but from right to left is only local. The selection of the relevant cycle when reading the metrological table from right to left, that is the control of the orders of magnitude, appears to be one of the main skills that was developed in the intermediate level. The set of exercises devoted to the surface of a square that I have shown you before, this one, show how the training was carried out. The variation of the side of the square allow all the aspects of the use of the metrological tables to be explored, if you look at all the dimensions. And the role of such variations is was studied by my PhD student, Charlotte de Varan, for her PhD thesis. That is the meaning of the variation of the side of the squares. Other kind of calculation were the calculation of the extraction of reciprocals. For example, in this tablet, on the obverse, we read 426.40, its reciprocal 1330. On the reverse, we see the algorithm. But before what is a reciprocal, the tables of reciprocals was the first of the numerical tables learned in Scribe School. They state that the reciprocal of 2 is 30, of 3 is 20, of 4 is 15, so you understand. The reciprocal of 2 is 30 because 2 times 30 is 60, that is 1. 3 times 20 is 60, that is 1, and so on. So the problem here was to find the reciprocal of this number, which is not in the table, this one. The notion of reciprocal is absolutely essential in cuneiform mathematics because just a remark before the division. You have the reciprocal of 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 8. 7 is missing. Because for the ancient scribes, 7 has no reciprocal. It means that 7 has no reciprocal, which can be written with a finite number of digits in base 60. That is the numbers, and the numbers which admit a reciprocal with a finite number of digits in base 60 are called regular in base 60. So why are the reciprocals so important? Because the division of a number A by a number B was in the cuneiform text was a sequence of two operations. First, finding the reciprocal of B, of the divisor. Second, multiplying A by the reciprocal of B. For example, to divide 5 by 30, you multiply 5 by the reciprocal of 30. The reciprocal of 30 is 2, because the reciprocal of 2 is 30. So it gives 5 times 2, it gives 10. In the same way, 426.40 divided by 640 is 426.40 multiplied by the reciprocal of 640, which is here, that is multiplied by 9, which gives 40. And here is the algorithm. The principle of the algorithm for the extraction of reciprocals is the following. The number 426.40, the reciprocal of which is to be found, is decomposed in two factors, 640 and 40. The reciprocals of these factors are 9 and 130. So the reciprocal to be found is a product of 9 and 130, which gives 1330. You can believe me. The nature of the numbers in sexagesimal place value notation is now clear. These numbers are the elements on which multiplications and divisions apply. Numbers in sexagesimal place value notation are not used to express quantities, but only as calculation device. A specific arithmetic was developed inside the universe of floating numbers in sexagesimal place value notation with specific operations, multiplications and division, and specific algorithms, the most important being the method of factorization used for extracting reciprocals. The fact that the numbers in sexagesimal place value notation do not convey absolute quantitative information is one of the most essential aspects of school mathematics in Mesopotamia, even if quite puzzling for modern observers. Another striking feature of the elementary education is that there is no trace of addition and subtraction in mathematical exercise. Addition and subtractions are operations that require the position of the numbers to be identified with respect to one other, and therefore cannot be applied to floating numbers. Contrarywise, additions and subtractions are omnipresent in economic and administrative documents where these operations apply on quantities, measurement values, counting animals, and so on. Everything happens as if in the school world, addition and subtraction did not belong to the field of mathematics, but only to the field of accounting. The picture which emerged from Nippo mathematical text is quite clear, but the picture is not so clear for other cities. We cannot really describe the mathematical education in the other schools with so much detail because, as said before, sources are much more scarce than in Nippur, with the notable exception of Marie. While the order of mathematical school exercise from other cities is difficult to detect, their content is not fundamentally different from those from Nippur, at least as the elementary education level is concerned. So the question is, how does advanced mathematics education fit into this landscape? It is often hard to distinguish intermediate level exercises from those of advanced level. It's also hard to distinguish mathematical texts which were specially intended for teaching from those which reflect a possible mathematical work independent from teaching. It is, however, possible to detect a structure reflecting an advanced pedagogical project in some mathematical texts. This evidence does not come from Nippur, but from other cities of southern Mesopotamia, probably from Larsa. Indeed, several tablets of the same type and with similar content dated to the Old Babylonian period and probably found at the same place constitute a strongly coherent collection which enlightens the advanced mathematical education. They are now kept at Yale University. All of them are single column tablets, sometimes very elongated. All of them contain a list of problem statements with no procedure of resolution. And for this, they were called catalog texts. In most of them, the text ends with a colophon subscript, providing the numbers of statements as well as, in some instances, the theme of the problems. For example, stone or canal or trench. The texts are written using only Sumerogram. Sumerogram are signs which were invented to represent the Sumerian language in the beginning of the third millennium, much earlier. Some features of the tablet, such as the shape, the presence of a colophon and the use of Sumerogram strongly evoke a school context. In the following, we see how the content and organization of the problems in these texts may reflect a pedagogical project. Among the tablets containing catalog text, one is of special interest. It is this one in the middle. Indeed, the problems stated on this catalog are solved in other tablets containing the procedures, that is the solution, two of which are known, this one and this one. The problems 1 to 8 of the catalog are solved in this procedure text. The problem 19 to 28 of this catalog are solved in this procedure text. And in between, the problems 9 to 18 probably were solved in another procedure text which is lost. These problems deal with the same situation, the dimensions of a trench to be excavated and the cost of this work. Some of the problems are linear and the others are quadratic. To underline some of the didactical features of these texts, let us examine the first two problems of these tablets. A trench, 5 nida is its length, 1.5 nida is its width, 0.5 nida is its depth, 10 gin is the volume of the work assignment. The work assignment is the volume of earth to be excavated each day by each worker. 6 she, silver, is the wage of the workers. The base, the volume, the number of workers, and the silver of the total expense, how much? You to know it. The length and the width cross, 7.30, it will give you. 7.30 and so on. And at the end, such is the procedure. The statement, line 1, and the question, line 2, are exactly the same as in the first section of the catalogue. The procedures opens and close with a frozen formula, you to know it, and such is the procedure. As in the catalog, the writing of the statement uses only Sumerogram. The writing of the procedure uses mainly syllabic Akkadian words, which are underlined in the translation. This is Akkadian. In the statement, the data appear as measurement value, 5 ninda, 1.5 ninda, and so on. In green on the slide. In the procedure, the numbers appear only in sexagesimal place value notation, 7.30 and so on, in red in the slide. As we see, the distribution of the two sorts of numerical entities is underlined by a change in writing system, sumerogram in the statement, syllabic Akkadian is the procedures. Thus, all these details, why? Because we see that we have a similar, the text is displayed in a similar way as in the calculation of surface I have shown you just before. So what is, the question is, what is the relationship between the measurement values given in the statement and the numbers used in the procedure? And not surprisingly, the answer is the same. This relationship is that provided by the metrological tables. 5 ninda corresponds to 5, 1.5 ninda corresponds to 1.30, and these numbers are those used in the procedures. Indeed, for example, line 3 computes the base of the trench, the length multiplied by the width, that is 5 multiplied by 1.30, which gives 7.30. Compute the volume, and so on, and so on. So this problem was the same didactic clauses as the exercise on the square analyzed before. The two different sorts of numerical entities are distributed in the same way. The data given in the statement and the in the statement as a measurement value, the procedure works only with sexagesimal place value notation, and the correspondence is given by the metrological tables. If we look at rapidly to the problem 2, 9 gin is a silver for a trench, 1.5 ninda, and so on, and so on. Problem 2 seems very similar to problem 1. The difference is that the total salary is given, 9 gin, but not the length of the trench, which is to be found, and the other data are the same. These apparently slight differences have a strong consequence. It is no longer possible to give a meaning to each step in the procedure. For example, the first step of the procedure is 1.30 multiplied by 6, which gives 9. It corresponds to the width multiplied by the depth, so that is a vertical surface. Line 9, 10, the 9 which is found in the previous step is divided by 10, which corresponds to nothing. After that, the result, 54, is multiplied by 2, which corresponds to nothing. And finally, 9 is divided by 1.48, which gives 5. 5 corresponds to the length, 5 ninda, to be found. The calculation seems to be done blind, but it gives the correct result. Unlike in problem 1, the question in problem 2 asks only the length, and the layout is different. So, to understand this procedure, let us compare the flow of calculation. In procedure 1, the flow of calculation is length multiplied by width, the base multiplied by depth, the volume, and so on and so on. In procedure 2, the flow of calculation is width multiplied by depth multiplied by the reciprocal of the assignment, and so on. We see that the procedure in problem 2 uses this part, that is, this part, which is exactly the same here, that is a subroutine of the procedure 1. If we represent the result of the subroutine by A, Procedure one can be reduced to the following structure. Length multiplied by A gives the quantity of silver. And in procedure two, the procedure two can be reduced to the following structure. Silver, the quantity of silver divided by A gives the length. So the structure of procedure one is similar to the calculation of the surface of a rectangle, the sides of which are the length and A. Procedure two is thus the reverse problem, that is, find a side of a rectangle, its surface, and one side being known. Such direct and reverse problems on rectangles are systematically explored in other catalogues of the collection. One of the tablets I have shown you. So, to sum up, the second problem, despite its resemblance to the first problem, is completely different in nature. The procedure does not rely on steps which are meaningful, but on the configuration of the rectangle, a side of which is a subroutine of problem one. The other problems, 3 to 6, are variants of this one. Problem seven is, and here is an example of catalog exploring all the facets of the calculation of the surface of a rectangle, or calculation of a side, knowing the surface and the other side, and so on. So this is probably the beginning of the curriculum, this kind of problems. Problem seven have a new kind of data, the length and the width. I added it's 630. This kind of problem leads to quadratic problem procedure. And problem eight also is a quadratic procedure. Finally, these problems, I1 to 8, introduce three main tools: find the quantity, a linear problem, find the quantity, calculating intermediate quantity, base, volume, number worker, and so on. Second, how to find the quantity by using a subroutine. And third, how to solve two models of quadratic problem. So, very quickly, I finished very quickly. Here, you have the 8 first problem of the catalog. Linear, where all the steps are meaningful. Linear problem, which use subroutine of the first one, quadratic problem. And after that, a new series of problems begins with linear problem, quadratic problem, with more or less the same structure. And after that, a third series of problems began with linear problem, quadratic problem, with more or less the same structure, and with new tools which are introduced, the one after the other. And the following tablet, this catalog, you have again this cycles of problem, linear and quadratic. So, to sum up, this tablet is composed of three sets of problems structured in the same way: a sequence of linear problem followed by a sequence of quadratic problem, all of which concerning the same situation. The fundamental methods are introduced in the first set, and the other set rely on this fundamental method and introduced progressively new tools. So this structure reflects a progressive program of teaching designed by masters of scribal schools in order to explain how to solve linear and quadratic problems. This program is organized into three cycles. So this catalog reflects a kind of spiral syllabus, which make again the same succession of exercises. So to conclude, we have brought to light three different didactical structures: the work of the masters, and more especially the way in which they are involved in shaping the curricula, appear to be different in these three cases. The first structure is a rigid curriculum governing elementary education. The second didactical structure is exemplified in Nippur by the quite flexible set of exercises based on small variations. For example, the set of exercises dealing with the surface of squares seem to have been shaped by a master of a group or a group of masters in order to explore all the facets of the use of metrological tables. This exploration is permitted by the variations of the sides of the square. As shown by Charlotte, the choices of the measurement of the size expose the student to the numerous issues raised by the use of metrological tables, such as the choice of the correct cycle, extrapolation, interpolation, circulation in the tables, and so on. And the third didactical structure is illustrated by the set of mathematical catalogs and related procedure texts. These texts are grounded on the elementary and intermediate corpus of mathematical knowledge. The structure of this list evokes a spiral syllabus elaborated by a master or a community of masters in order to teach the methods for solving linear quadratic problems. Unlike the elementary curriculum, this syllabus more clearly reflects choices made by individuals or communities. Thank you for your attention.